The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the century of lies.
I've got an announcement I want to share with the world today. Zamora Becker was born my new granddaughter. Real healthy, strong, good set of lungs and ready to go. Like all of us Beckers. I want to welcome you to today's edition of Century of Lies. I'm really proud to of the caliber of guests that deemed to come on our program. And I want to introduce Frank Smythe before we put him on the air here. He's a freelance journalist who's been writing about Guatemalan drug trafficking since 1991 in publications including The Progressive, The Sacramento Bee, The Washington Post, The Village Voice, The New Republic, Salon.com, and the Wall Street Journal. He's a special correspondent for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram and The Economist. He's a contributor to a new book, Crimes of War, What the Public Should Know. And I'm proud to welcome to our show today, Mr. Frank Smythe.
Thank you, Dean, and congratulations on your granddaughter.
Well, thank you, sir. It's always a glorious day, isn't it, when there's more of us?
Absolutely.
And she is beautiful. I am quite proud, I guess. It's pretty obvious at this point. But, Frank, what caught my attention, most recent edition of The Observer had a story in there about the horrors, really, that go on in Guatemala, the lack of control of these drugs. Tell us about that piece, if you will, sir.
Well, essentially, the piece is about cocaine trafficking through Guatemala. The week before the piece came out, the Associated Press reported unnamed U.S. Embassy officials in Guatemala City saying that three-fourths of the cocaine reaching the United States is now coming through Guatemala. What my piece established is that the Guatemala has neither prosecuted nor extradited to the United States any of its alleged kingpins in more than 10 years since the murder of the Guatemalan Chief Justice. And that murder was carried out to stop the extradition of a Guatemalan army officer wanted in the United States for drug trafficking. But the essence of the piece is that the alleged ringleaders, the most important suspects that have been identified to date by the Bush administration, are Guatemala's former top two intelligence chiefs, both men who were instrumental in ordering human rights abuses, including acts of genocide, back in the early 1980s, as members of an unofficial group within the intelligence commands called La Cofradía. That these same two top former intelligence chiefs that started rising to power in the early 80s have since turned these same intelligence commands to organized crimes, including bringing stolen cars from the United States to Guatemala and running hundreds of tons of drugs from Guatemala to the United States.
Well, Frank, the fact is, this is nothing new necessarily. Perhaps it's more obvious and glaring than other instances, but it happens in many, if not most, or even all of the Central and South American countries, the Caribbean nations, that they are many times staging points, areas where they move these drugs for a while and then break it down to smaller shipments and bring it into the U.S. Let's talk about that. How pervasive is this problem?
Well, I think it is new because you've never had a country so small moving so much cocaine to the United States and moving so much cocaine with such blanket impunity for so long. The United States has complained, for example, about Colombia's inability 10, 15, 20 years ago to prosecute its own alleged kingpins. But Colombia, starting in the early 1990s and continuing through the 1990s and even up until today, has been prosecuting alleged kingpins and extraditing others to the United States. Similarly, Mexico, which had a major problem 6, 7 years ago in terms of not prosecuting drug lords, is now prosecuting its own drug lords and extraditing others to the United States. Where Guatemala alone in this hemisphere has taken literally little or no action against any of its own alleged suspects, and the amount of cocaine going through Guatemala is unprecedented for the region. I mean, Guatemala's traffic is now as large as Mexico is, and of course there's a lot of overlap between the two. But what's amazing is that there's relatively no law enforcement whatsoever. on any large scale within Guatemala. And even the DEA has been trying to arrest people outside of Guatemala, but it's not been able to arrest or help arrest Guatemalan suspects inside Guatemala.
I would agree with you that the pervasiveness, the width and breadth of the problem in Guatemala is something to be recognized. But they're not alone in this. I mean, I understand that there's one-fifth of the Mexican FBI, I think it's AIU, something to that effect is the acronym, that they have been found to be in bed with the drug lords in Mexico. And, you know, whether it's the military or it's your FBI, you do have a problem when a fifth or more of your agents are involved in this.
Well, to put it in comparison, in Guatemala, 75% of the police officers of the former police force were fired for under accusations of corruption before the United States helped disband that police force in 2002. Now the new Guatemalan police force, the top three officers in that force, a U.S.-trained force, were recently arrested in Virginia by the DEA after they were lured up there, allegedly for training, after the DEA apparently collected evidence against these individuals. But more importantly, the difference between Mexico and Guatemala is that in Mexico, law enforcement and intelligence chiefs have in the past, and to some degree ongoing, have been accused of colluding with and protecting organized crime syndicates. In Guatemala, the difference is that former intelligence officers, retired Guatemalan military generals, are themselves accused of being not colluders and protectors of drug syndicates, but being the actual mafia bosses that are allegedly running those mafia syndicates. So that's quite a difference.
I hear you. And Frank, is there not a parallel perhaps between that Guatemalan situation and under Manuel Noriega in Panama a couple of decades back?
That I think would be the closest parallel that one could draw, but the amount of traffic going through Guatemala is much greater than it ever was, even back in the late 1980s, before the invasion of Panama was going through Panama. And also, I think the Reagan administration went into Panama less because of its concerns about drug trafficking and more of its concerns that Noriega was getting too close to the Sandinistas and other leftist forces in Central America.
Right, and as I understand it, there's always the balloon effect. Wherever we can squash the proclivity for these criminals to be, they move to another nearby country or to another region. You've been watching this drug war over the decades. Is there any sign that we're being successful?
Oh, not at all. But here's the difference. The balloon analogy is the right one. If you drug traffic is like a balloon. If you push down in any one area, it'll move to another area. For example, if you push down on coca growing in Bolivia, it'll shift to Colombia. If you push on parts of Colombia, it'll shift to other parts of Colombia or back to Bolivia. But the thing about Guatemala is there's been no pressure on the Guatemala part of the balloon for more than 10 years since the murder of this Chief Justice. So while the United States has been pursuing drug war activities that are putting the burden of the effort on generally poor people in countries like Bolivia who are maybe involved in coca growing, in Guatemala you've got top level syndicates, mafia syndicates that are run by retired military officers of the Guatemalan military that are operating with complete and total impunity. So you know, if you push down one part of the balloon, it will go to another part, but the converse is also true. If you don't push down at any particular part of the balloon, then the amount of traffic going through that area will only expand, and that's what's happened in Guatemala.
Frank, it's rather puzzling to me that you know, I tally $11 trillion we've handed over to law enforcement and to the black market, you know, in the basic lifetime of this drug war, and yet it stands tall. It's still swinging the cat, so to speak. It is still in gear and working. There are no politicians that dare come on this show to talk about the subject of drug war. We offer cash money to give it to a charity or for them personally if they want. There is no one in government that's willing to come on this show. Will we break the back of this information, this propaganda war? Is there a way to do that? What do you see?
Well, I think the drug war has certainly gone down in priority since 9/11 and for the Bush administration. It certainly, if you look on the White House website, I don't think you can see anything there under narcotics in terms of national security issues, which is a change from previous years. But, you know, in terms of the story that was in the Texas Observer and the Guatemalan military's role in drug trafficking, I don't think that the evidence in the story necessarily supports either a pro or an anti-drug war position. I think one could make the argument either way. What it shows is first of all the fact that the war on drugs pursued by the United States has been targeted more against poor people who are involved in growing products at the grassroots, as opposed to the people near the top of these drug pyramids. And certainly there's some exceptions to that in Colombia and Mexico, as I've said, but certainly the top of this pyramid in Guatemala has been totally ignored. And I think there's something else. And I've written in favor of harm reduction and against mandatory minimum sentences for LSD and other drugs in the United States, in the New Republic and elsewhere. So I'm on record as being someone who has been critical of the drug war and favors a harm reduction type strategy, which I'm sure your listeners are familiar with. But the problem when you have a large criminal syndicate in a nation like Guatemala, which is rapidly becoming and is starting to be considered a failed state by a lot of analysts, is that this criminal syndicate then takes over, or already has taken over, and is able to tyrannize the population and corrode from within the civil society and the institutions of that society, and undermine whatever democratic aspirations Guatemala has been struggling with for a long time. That's the problem. I mean, you can look at this from a drug trafficking perspective, or you can look at it from a human rights perspective. But all the evidence shows that the same clandestine security forces, these hidden powers, as the Washington Office on Latin America and others have called them, that operate in the shadows of the Guatemalan state, have been involved in both murdering civil society leaders, trade unionists, community leaders who stand up against any element of their impunity, no matter what that is, for past human rights abuses, for lands, for stealing land, or from building clandestine runways to run drugs, whatever it may be. These kinds of people who stand up to them have been murdered from people, from peasants, literally at the grassroots, all the way to the country's chief justice. And that's an intolerable situation, regardless of what one thinks about what the ultimate solution is to the war on drugs. Ultimately, this kind of high-level criminality needs to be dealt with. And the irony is that the United States has been ignored the situation in Guatemala because it's so out of control, they don't know what to do about it.
There's corruption. I want to extend it one more time to Nuevo Laredo. 1,100 people killed there this year by the violence between the competing cartels. Police chiefs shot out of the saddle, so to speak. Occasionally, journalists on either side of the border are taken out. And I think it's appropriate that we allow the discussion. And again, I want to get back to, why will these politicians not talk about this openly anymore?
Well, I don't think it's in any politician's interest to address a problem that he or she cannot resolve. I think this is the basic problem. I think there's an increasing awareness on an intellectual level that the war on drugs is an unwinnable contest, at the very least, and that there needs to be a different kind of approach. But it's going to take a while, and I think you also have to recognize the massive criminality that operates in places like Nuevo Laredo and other parts of the Texan-Mexican border, and in countries like Guatemala and in countries like Colombia, that this poses a problem beyond just the war on drugs, but to the civil society itself, and that has to be dealt with. I mean, in Guatemala, you have a situation where the military has long enjoyed impunity for the worst aggregate human rights abuses to have occurred during the Cold War anywhere in Latin America. No officer has ever been prosecuted for any Cold War era abuse. A few officers have been prosecuted for one 1990 murder, and then for which was not considered to be a wartime abuse, and then some other post-war abuses. But this impunity has now carried over into drug trafficking. The human rights community in Guatemala would like to see these retired officers prosecuted for their human rights abuses, both past and ongoing. But the problem is that they're not being prosecuted for any crime, whether it's murders of civil society leaders, past massacres of or destruction of wholesale destruction of villages, or organized crimes that they're carrying out today. They just enjoy blanket impunity, and that's a separate problem, I think, than what to do about the war on drugs. And even if we're one to favor decriminalization or move toward harm reduction, you still have to figure out what to do with this overwhelming level of criminality. And, you know, I think the case of Guatemala really, it does, like I said, it doesn't fit either a pro or an anti-drug war agenda. It really is, it represents a different kind of problem for the United States than it does for Guatemala.
All right. And again, you're an established long-term reporter. You've been at this a while. And I, again, I cannot understand why reporters, when they have the chance to speak to the drug czar or any representatives of the ONDCP, whatever, they never ask the question, why do you allow this to continue when it's been an abject failure?
Well, I think that question has come up. The Washington Office on Latin America has recently had a press conference earlier this year that raised that question and pointed out that the wholesale price of cocaine has actually dropped over the past few decades. So clearly, the attempt to make cocaine less available in the United States has failed. I think these questions do get asked. But ultimately, the bigger question is, you know, what would the alternatives be? And I think that's where the discussion in the United States has been somewhat stilted. Perhaps the situation in Guatemala will provoke further discussion about what needs to be done, or what would be the best solution toward the war on drugs. And I think that would require careful thought in terms of how to handle it. But I don't think the American public is necessarily going to be receptive to that. And I think you've seen very few politicians, Jim McDermott from Washington State may be one, who have been willing to sort of take the lead on that issue.
Well, Frank, I oftentimes say that the war of terror is the war on drugs with afterburners, and I haven't had a chance to read it, but it says you're a contributor to Crimes of War, What the Public Should Know. Please tell us a bit about that book.
Actually, it wasn't a new book. It came out a while ago. It was edited by Roy Gutman, a Pulitzer Prize winner with Newsday, and David Reif, a noted military analyst. And essentially, it came, I think, out of the situation in the 1990s in the Balkans, where a lot of reporters were covering a very bloody conflict, and they were unclear, or it wasn't apparent to the reporters, what constituted a war crime and what did not. I mean, it's very clear when civilians are massacred that this would be a violation of the laws of war. But I think there are a lot of indiscriminate use of firepower, for example. There are a lot of things in warfare that may be violations of the rules of war, but one needs to be familiar with the Geneva Conventions and other covenants and how they've been applied to know what is a war crime and what isn't. And so the Crimes of War book was an effort by journalists to write a book not with legalese, but in layman's terms, to use case studies that journalists had covered to determine whether or not these case studies were manifestations of violations or even egregious violations of the rules of war. So that's where it came out of, and I think it has examples really cutting across the political spectrum and around from around the globe.
You know, Frank, I consider that the drug war basically, either economically or many other ways, impacts every aspect of our society and around the world. An example, the Rolling Stones, of course, they're gonna play at the Super Bowl this year, but they're also going to do a concert in Rio de Janeiro, and they have a problem there that the drug lords run the city at night. That there's shootings, et cetera, and they were talking about to have the Stones there, they were going to have very increased security to protect against these drug lords.
Yeah, and when you're talking about Rio de Janeiro, and I've been there, you're talking about not Pablo Escobar's or even people like the Guatemalan former intelligence chiefs. You're talking about local drug lords, barrio neighborhood drug lords, who are still very powerful and perhaps murderous in their own right, but are operating on a very small local level in terms of controlling drug dealing. And they are very violent people. They murdered a journalist, Tim Lopez, in 2002, in fact, cut off his head to send a signal to other journalists about who attempt to cover their criminality. But one of the problems, there's a difference between the substances themselves and the criminality that is often associated with the illegal trafficking. Some of these drug lords that Tim Lopez was investigating in the slums of Rio de Janeiro, for example, besides being involved in sales of cocaine, they were also involved in sexual abuse of minors. So I think it's something to keep in mind that this kind of criminality, when it goes unchecked, tends to just get larger and more vicious and more bloody as time goes on, unless something is done to change the equation, either to decriminalize the substances or to go after the illegal syndicates themselves.
You know, many folks of late, I've heard the phrase used, don't criticize the media, become the media. And certainly in this 21st century, the internet has begun to take the place of, newspapers. Certain publications are losing readers on a daily basis. Your thoughts, sir, have we made progress? Is this independent media making a difference?
Well, that's a good question to ask me, Dean. You know, I'm somebody who, for the past 19 years or so, has always written and continues to write simultaneously for both mainstream and alternative or progressive media outlets. You name them, I've probably written for them, both in the mainstream media and in the progressive media. And I'm a critic of both. I think the mainstream media, the problem is less corporate ownership, for the reason some people say, than corporate ownership in the sense that the mainstream media is interested, especially in the recent years, in making a profit, which means they have less money for investigative journalism. And I think also the mainstream media, when you're covering a beat, you need to negotiate your access to officials on that beat. And that may mean making compromises in order not to be cut out from information. And I think that's a real problem. I think that really explains some of the problems that the mainstream media has had, including, the Judith Miller case. But I think the alternative media has not been much better, and I think the alternative media rarely contributes to the actual discussion. There's a lot of opinion that is circulated in the alternative media, and rarely are facts that contribute or advance the society's overall knowledge of a situation are reported in the alternative media. And I think the problem with the alternative media is it's drawn a lot of energy away from people's criticism and close reading of the mainstream media. So people will go to alternative or arguably marginal outlets and media outlets. And I think what the right's done in the United States is reached out and bullied the mainstream media and bullied and pulled them to the right, where the progressive community, I think, by and large, has divorced itself from the mainstream media to create their own, quote, alternative media. And I think, in fact, that's been a strategic mistake. I think what progressives really need to do, if they have their own media, it can be useful, but I think they have to stay engaged with what the mainstream media is doing and constantly monitor it and criticize it factually for things that one takes issue with. And I think there's too little of that by progressives who were interested in these issues.
Well, once again, we've been speaking with Mr. Frank Smyth, a very respected reporter. I appreciate you being with us. His website, if you'd like to read more of his stuff, is franksmyth.com. That's S-M-Y-T-H. Frank, thank you for taking time out of your holiday season to be with us. Any closing thoughts, sir?
No, my pleasure, Dean. Congratulations again on your granddaughter, Zamora, right?
Yes, sir.
That sounds great. She sounds lovely.
She is indeed, and I thank you for that, sir, and we appreciate you being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right.
Hey, bye-bye. Man, this is Tommy Chong for the Pacifica Network telling everybody, don't let, what is it, man?
Don't let free speech go up in smoke.
Don't let free speech go up in smoke, man.
This is Phil Smith of the Drug War Chronicle with this week's Corrupt Cop Story for the Drug Truth Network. We've got a Texas sheriff, a California border patrolman, and three Arizona soldiers going to prison on drug-related corruption charges this week. But our story of the week comes from Chicago, where federal agents arrested a Chicago police officer on charges he conspired to sell 50 pounds of pot. Near North District Police Officer Joseph Pecora, age 27, had scored the weed from a suburban dealer in April, but that man's supplier later turned informant, put on a wire, and recorded incriminating conversations with Pecora. With the weed long gone, he could only be charged with conspiracy, not possession, and he was. He's been relieved of his police powers, but walked out of jail Monday morning on a $150,000 recognizance bond. If you want to check out details on the rest of this week's Corrupt Cop stories, go online to www.stopthedrugwar.org.
Identify this jurisdiction by its outrageously punitive laws. This government convicts and kills more people than any civilized nation. Because of their drug war policies, they send more people to prison than any other jurisdiction on planet Earth. And they remain to this day proud of their efforts. There's no breaking the traditions in Texas.
Okay, I just spoke with the Houston City Council this week, reminded them that tomorrow makes 91 years of drug war since the passage of the Harrison Narcotics Act. And, of course, the mayor was laughing, joking, looking at a computer screen while I gave my speech. But you'll be able to hear that on this week's Cultural Baggage Show. Next week, I'm going before the Harris County Commissioners to do the same thing, to tear them a new one about the Harris County Jail, where hundreds of people are still sleeping on the concrete floor. They're still drinking their water out of the back of the toilet. Something to be proud of in this Christmas season, don't you think? Real quickly, I want to note that the sponsor of this year's Journey for Justice March on Washington, D.C. may be headed to prison. She's a fellow radio talk show host who was convicted just the other day of attempting to deceive state officials to obtain welfare benefits. Roberta Franklin, 50, was found guilty of lying about her criminal record in application for food stamps. She runs the morning show there in Montgomery, Alabama. She's well known for her stance against crowded prisons in that state. She's now been convicted of the state of Alabama for food stamps. For some several hundred dollars worth of food stamps, they now want to send her to prison for 20 years.
My name's Tony Serra, and I'm a criminal trial lawyer, and I have been such for 42 years. With an office in San Francisco, I've done drug cases from their inception, really, in the mid-60s. I was part of the Haight-Ashbury movement. I participated in all of the dimensions, let's just say, of the Haight-Ashbury movement. So I'm kind of considered an old hippie. And with a good trial record.
That was Mr. Tony Serra. He will be our guest on next week's Cultural Baggage Show. I think you should tune in. The man slices and dices. He was just getting warmed up there. If you've heard him before, you know what I'm talking about. If there are any affiliate stations out there listening to the Drug Truth Network, please let me know before year's end. I sure would like to have 50 stations. I know the folks in Bend, Oregon played us for several weeks before they let me know. So if you're out there and you're playing our shows, I'd love to hear from you. Thus far, we have no essays from anybody for either the Dot or the Dash Award. Nobody apparently wants to talk about this on planet Earth, at least nobody who thinks the drug war is a good thing. We did have one professor get in touch with me, but when I told him he'd have to spend 20 minutes defending this against me on the airwaves, I haven't heard anything back. It's really up to you, my friends. The drug lords do run both sides of this equation. I think we've proven that quite handily, and it's really going to be up to you to do something about it, because you know the day that we regulate these drugs, we're going to destroy Osama's opium's worth, we're going to get rid of the cartels, we're going to destroy the gangs, we're going to eliminate ODs and take away our children's easy access to drugs. So it's really up to you. If you'd like to learn more, if you'd like to get more involved, please visit either of our websites, either drugtruth.net or inprohibition.org. You are the answer. I'm counting on you. You are the ones to get this done. And, do what you can.
For the Drug Truth Network, this is Dean Becker asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. The show produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Our engineer, Philip Duffy.